Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. As many of you know, diabetes is the fastest growing chronic disease in the United States and all around the world. In fact, of the 100 million adults in the U.S., the Centers for Disease Control estimates that I think 300 million. I lost this stat, but there are many adults. There are hundreds of millions of adults in the United States, and the CDC estimates that about a third, that's about 84 million, so do the math, are what's called pre-diabetic, that is at risk for developing diabetes, but not quite there yet. So we're going to focus now on the question of cost-effective ways to prevent people from developing diabetes as part of WNYC's week-long look at diabetes in a series called Sugarland. And joining me now are Cheryl Olson, author and researcher who advises on how media can change behavior, and the person behind WNYC's Sugarland series, Joanne Donnelly, Vice President of Healthy Living for the YMCA of Greater New York, which offers preventive programs for people who are pre-diabetic. Hi, Cheryl. Hi, Joanne. Thanks so much for coming on.
Hi, thank you.
And listeners, have you been diagnosed as pre-diabetic? We want to hear from you. How have you or haven't you been able to manage your diagnosis? And is cost an issue? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Joanne, you want to talk about the definition of pre-diabetes?
Yeah, so actually the fact that this thing called prediabetes is a thing, right? So to your point about, well, there are about 80 to 84 million adults in the U.S. Who have this condition called prediabetes. And it is can be diagnosed with a simple blood test, a blood sugar test. And your doctor can tell you whether or not you're in this prediabetes range with blood sugar. There's other risk factors also, your weight, how much exercise you do, your family history, your age. Some of those are controllable and some of those are not.
So at the YMCA of Greater New York, you offer prevention classes for people who are labeled pre-diabetic.
Correct.
What do you teach them?
So yeah, that's a great question. So we like to focus on the risk factors that you actually have control over. So to my earlier point, your weight, how much exercise you do, those are some of the things we focus on. I like to tell folks that over the course of the year-long program, we focus in three major areas. One is we look at nutrition, particularly how much fat people are eating, and they set a fat gram goal. We talk about physical activity. And strategize ways for folks to hit their physical activity goals, which sounds super simple and is really not easy for a lot of folks. And then the third bucket is we look at behavioral strategies. So what does it take to change behavior and to make that change stick? So we spend a lot of sessions talking about that with the group, and the group support each other. It's really critical that folks are in a group.
Now, Cheryl, you report that Americans pay $100 billion a year to diagnose and treat diabetes and prediabetes. What are the most common out-of-pocket costs, especially ones that get burdensome?
It depends on the kind of diabetes you have. Yeah, that, I saw that figure, and I that's what got me interested in starting something with this series. So $101 billion to diagnose and treat diabetes, and that's growing faster than for other disease categories like heart disease. With really, one of the things that got me interested in this also is my son was diagnosed his third week of college with type 1 diabetes. And I, even though I have a doctorate in public health, I didn't know you could get it at that age. And now I understand that you can get it at any age. And I know in my personal life, if he has to buy insulin somewhere away from where he's covered with insurance, it's $300 for a vial. And if you don't have coverage, you're talking a lot of money. If you need test strips, which people with type 1 and type 2 often use, that can be $2 a test strip. And if they're saying test 7 times a day, that really adds up for a person.
Let's take a phone call. Here is Richard in Brooklyn, who says he's a diabetes researcher. Richard, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. Yes, I'm at Downstate Medical Center. And I'm the first author on a major paper involving 25 other researchers and clinicians on treating diabetes with low-carbohydrate diets. Now, of course, people know that carbohydrates are involved in some sense. The disease is a disease of carbohydrate intolerance. But the medical establishment has very strongly resisted consistent, thoroughgoing low-carbohydrate diets.
And Richard, I get it. I'm going to leave it there and get a reaction. Who of you wants to react? Cheryl, I'm not sure that I agree with his assessment. I thought that the main message to people to avoid diabetes type 2, which you can develop later in life as, you know, as a function of behavior if you're also genetically at risk, is to cut down on carbs.
Well, one of the things we know from some of the newer research is that if you eat a lot of foods that raise your blood sugar, so I talk about glycemic index, that is a risk factor for increasing your risk of getting type 2 diabetes. But it's a much bigger factor is weight gain. That's like maybe an 4-8 times risk factor versus diet, which is, I was just looking at the relative risks, and I won't go into all of that, but that can be a factor. And there are even some companies that are looking at people's individual metabolisms and how they individually react to foods to try to custom tailor diets so that you don't have the spike in blood sugar after your meals and that you can try to delay the onset of diabetes or manage your diabetes better. But really, this stuff that Joanne's talking about in terms of bringing down your weight, maybe, you know, 5-7%, 10% of your body weight, if you lose a modest amount of weight, you can often go off one of your medications and basically be okay.
In fact, I think we have a story like that on the phones. Anne in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi,
Anne. Hi, Brian. Good morning. I personally, I'm in the healthcare field. Mm-hmm. I was shocked when I had my doctor I asked for the test, hemoglobin A1C, and it was a 6. That put me at pre-diabetes. I am skinny. I was 115 pounds. And I said, what the heck? So I came home, no medication, changed my diet. It's not, you know, most of the time people think being overweight, yes, that's a big risk factor, but you can be skinny and still get diabetes based on your diet. I was eating a lot of carbs. I simply cut all the refined carbs out, go easy evening fruits, and did a lot more exercise, and I went from hemoglobin 6 back to 5.5, completely normal. Great. And it was done in a matter of months.
It's a great story for you. And, Joanne, it's an inspiration for others.
Oh, absolutely. And I think what Anne represents is that if you hear one person's story, you hear one person's story, right? So, but, I will say, back to Cheryl's point, the YMCA's Diabetes Prevention Program is an evidence-based program. It's based on large research studies, which show that there are a few simple things, and again, easy and simple are not the same thing when it comes to behavior change. There are a few simple things that folks can do that the evidence shows can reduce new cases of type 2 diabetes. And in the research, the original research study, which was published in New England Journal of Medicine, making simple lifestyle changes, reducing body weight, to Cheryl's point, by 7%, and exercising 150 minutes a week, reduced new cases of type 2 diabetes by over 58%. In the entire study population. And for people over 60, it was a 70% reduction. And it was a randomized control trial, so they had a group on medication also, and the reduction was 30%. So the researchers said, wow, the lifestyle intervention working on behavior was much more powerful than the drug intervention without any of the side effects or cost, right? And that's where the YMCA Diabetes Prevention Program got born.
And that's why you're calling this WNYC series Sugarland. Gwen in East Harlem, you're on WNYC. Hi, Gwen.
Hi. First of all, thank you for having this show on. I heard it this morning, and it just, thank God. My husband died 20 months ago of a diabetic heart attack after being misdiagnosed by his doctor. And this has been a horrible thing because we do have insurance, and we could have covered this. Now, I just want to say that we went to the doctor over and over again, and my husband could not eat. He was peeing himself on the subway, in the car. He couldn't hold anything. And he wasn't overweight, and he worked. He was a mailman, so he walked 5 miles a day. But she finally said, well, you have diabetes, but if you just, change your food around a little bit. Well, the thing is, his sugar was very high, and he had symptoms, not just those symptoms, but he was African American and he was 73 years old. So I sent, you know, I asked her to put him on insulin because it, at least it would prevent something from happening. Well, she would not do that. She would not give me a blood test kit, and she kept poo-pooing it. And one day when my husband got up and told me he was nauseous, I thought he had stomach virus, mm-hmm. because I never heard of a heart attack that made you have a stomach ache. And that's what he had, and he died in my arms in about 5 minutes. I got to tell you, I still have the emails asking this woman, and I found out later, I'm going to tell you something. It's better to be safe than sorry, and you have to look at the whole picture. If somebody is 73 and they're on the fence, and they're not overweight, but they're peeing themselves, I'm under the influence that impression that insulin cannot hurt you. It cannot hurt you to take it. But if you don't take it, it can kill you. And now I have a dead husband that died way too soon because somebody would not listen to the patient. And it's been a devastating loss for me. And I just want to tell you that you need to cover diabetic heart attack till the cows come home, because people don't know what it is. There's no chest pain. Your arm doesn't hurt. It looks like the person is going to throw up. Maybe they have stomach virus. And that's what happened to me.
What a horrible story. And thank you for your courage in sharing it publicly. And Gwen, I guess that's the lesson is, you're saying the lesson is not only for, you know, future spouses or other loved ones who might be with somebody when they go into a diabetic heart attack state, but also for doctors who for some reason might not take the signs of that somebody needs insulin seriously enough.
That's right. Look at the entire picture, okay? Because let me tell you something. Somebody that is urinating in their pants uncontrollably, they have a problem. This is not normal for anybody, no matter what their age is, to have to urinate so badly that, you know, it was humiliating for my husband. Yes. Coming home from work, you know, on the subway. So we knew something was wrong, but we actually are lay people, and we thought that it was something else. But the doctor, as a doctor, should have realized that the symptoms were that of severe diabetes. Even my friends noticed it. My friend kept asking me about his 300-plus sugar and why he wasn't being treated.
Gwen, thank you. Thank you again for your courage, and we're so sorry for your loss.
Yeah, Brian, I could comment that sounds very much like a case of undiagnosed type 1 diabetes, where you're losing weight, you're urinating a lot, you're very thirsty, very much like the story of Brandon that we have in our series.
Now let me follow up on this, because you say type 1 diabetes, which is what people casually refer to as childhood diabetes. If you're right in this case, here's a 73-year-old man who was never diagnosed with, quote, childhood diabetes, and he said he was 73.
Right. I talked to Dr. David Lamb at Mount Sinai. He said he had a patient in her 70s who had been treating for years for what they thought was type 2, and she wasn't responding as well as he thought she should. He did some further tests and found out she had type 1 and needed insulin. It's a very, you know, and a lot of doctors just assume, oh, it's, you know, juvenile diabetes, what they used to call type 1. That's something that kids get. And that's dead wrong. There was a big Chinese study where they found more, you know, that more of the new diagnosis of type 1s were in adults than in kids.
Hmm.
And also with something you see with not everyone has to be overweight to have type 2, especially South Asians. They often will have type 2 at a lower body weight. So all these things, you know, type 1, type 2, it's not as clear cut as people think.
Yeah, that was a heartbreaking story. I think, you know, the YMCA, we always take our social responsibility seriously to help educate physicians that there actually is a program out there for folks who you know, to try to get upstream and ahead of the problem before the diagnosis happens. And to be really clear, the YMCA's program is for people with type 2. You know, type 1, to Cheryl's point, is a different bucket.
Joanne, before you go, where can listeners get more information on the preventive programs offered by the Y?
Great question. So in the five boroughs of New York City, you can get information from nyc.y, diabetes.com. On that website, you can take a risk test, you can download a referral form from your physician, and you can see where our classes are. We ask folks to fill out some information because our recruitment outreach coordinator will contact folks and let them know about what the program looks like and get them assigned to the appropriate class for them.
And listeners, if you're interested in seeing more of Cheryl's reporting, including a really cool comic book version of a few of the stories she's covered on misdiagnosis and the rising cost of insulin, you can go to wnyc.org/sugarland. And of course, you can hear the rest of the series there, wnyc.org/sugarland. My guests have been Cheryl Olson, author and researcher who advises on how media can change behavior, and the person behind WNYC's Sugarland series on diabetes, and Joanne Donnelly, vice president of healthy living for the YMCA of Greater New York, which offers preventive programs for people who are pre-diabetic. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.